You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
We are smoking the CAO Pylon, right?
Maybe. I don't know. It's got that little accent mark. Yeah. So maybe the Pylon or I don't know.
Maybe.
Don't know. Haven't heard this word pronounced out loud, so but Google it, you'll find it.
Yeah, this is one of CAO's new releases. This will be released to the masses probably late September. However, you might run across it at a couple of your local shops like we have.
Yeah, this was another one of the Tim's picks. He said this is something he was able to pre-order at the ICPCR. I think that's all the letters go together. But yeah, this is something brand new from CAO. They're kind of resurrecting an old style of doing things. Tobacco is... it's fermented in kind of like just layers of tobacco. Well, they started using a circular pylon, if that's the correct word. And there's even a picture of it on the label, where instead of just having it like stacked in sheets, they kind of stack it up in a circle, which causes it to ferment slower. And you know, it's kind of expensive to do it that way, because normally they want to do it fast so they can get it out to the market. This stuff, you know, like I said, ferments at a slower rate, and which will enhance the flavor. And this is definitely a medium to full-bodied cigar.
Yeah, I mean, here you've got the Ecuador Habana wrapper with a Nicaragua binder and filler. And, I mean, this is a Churchill size, and I typically don't smoke too many Churchills. I mean, I'm more of a 60-ring gauge, probably a 6, maybe 6.5-inch cigar. But the 7x48 here is, got a good mouth feel to it. It produces a good smoke. I mean, it's nutty. It's subtle, not, overly spicy or anything. So it's got a very good, well-balanced flavor.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of spice and some cedar, some pepper, a little bit of cocoa. I mean, it's definitely a...
just say Coca-Cola?
Cocoa, you deaf fuck. Yeah, it's not overpowering, but it does have some flavor. And like I said, I typically rotate. You know, so I'll smoke one thing for a while, but I keep finding myself coming back to a lot of the CAO brands. I mean, the Flathead is probably one of my regular smokes. Those Reindeer Christmas cigars, I smoke the hell out of those.
The MX2s.
Yeah, they're pretty much like MX2 with extra Ligero. Another thing I recently tried, and if you follow us on our Facebook and Instagram, you would have seen the picture I posted the other day of they've added to the Flathead line, and now they've come out with something they're calling the Steel Horse. And the one I had was the Ape Hanger is the bigger one. It was the Bull Neck, I think it was.
Yeah, the Bull Neck.
Yeah, it was a 6x5x66 ring gauge, a freaking massive cigar. it had to be at least a good... maybe 2.5 hour smoke.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting outside, just doing up some chickens and stuff like that on the smoker this afternoon, and I was tempted to light mine up, and I was like, you know what, I don't know that I'm gonna.
That's an all day smoke. You gotta have time to deal with it. And the thing about it was strong, but it wasn't overpowering. Like smoking something that big, I expected to be like on my ass by the end of the smoke, and I was still, it was strong. I was well smoked out, but I was still functional at the end of it. It didn't like put me down like some other giant smokes like that had. It was very, it was strong, but it was balanced. It didn't like knock me out.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, mine's in the humidor, so that's probably going to be next weekend's adventure. I mean, I've got a beer bottling project that I need to undertake, so, I'm going to have a good opportunity that I'm going to want some downtime, so that'll be it.
Another thing we got going on, I just want to correct something from last week when we were completely sleep deprived. I realized when I went back and listened that I said the cigar we're smoking was the Romeo Anejo Zero, and yeah, I just can't read a cigar label when I haven't had that much sleep. It's actually just Romeo Anejo. There's no zero at the end, so Don't tweet at me. Like, we found the mistake, and we're idiots.
And we'll own up to our mistakes.
Another thing we need to do a shout out for, there's an event coming up that we are probably going to be at coming up next Saturday, August 29th starting at 3 p.m. and going till whenever. There's going to be a Rocky Patel event at the Cigar Shop in Cumming. So we will be up there at some point. They're going to have food, raffles, big discounts, and of course Rocky Patel himself will be there. So yeah, you buy a box, he'll sign it. Yeah, if you want to meet the legend behind all the Rocky Patel cigars.
Yeah, wasn't there a rumor of maybe some potential live music and stuff too? Maybe
that's what it says on the flyer here. So we'll see what happens, but we will definitely be there. And another thing, we talked about it a long, long time ago, and it finally came to fruition. But our club shirts, the stuff we wear out to events, our Real Men Smoke Cigars smoking shirts, are finally available to the general public. You can find those at realmensmokecigars.com/cigarnerds.html.
Word.
And like I said, if you go there, check them out, look like a cigar nerd. And even if you don't want to buy one of our shirts, they have a huge line of like nerdy stuff. I mean, I've bought a Boba Fett shirt from them. They got Darth Vader, all kind of comic book stuff, sports related stuff. So you can find a shirt that goes with whatever your nerddom is. So definitely check them out. And with that, we'll be right back with our Dragon Con survival episode.
Stay tuned, folks.
And welcome back to the podcast. This is our Dragon Con prep survival episode. Brad here has, 10, 15 years ago was your last Dragon Con?
Yeah, I mean, it's been basically a decade, I'm pretty much a Dragon Con virgin, so.
Watch out, they sacrifice virgins there.
I mean, it'll be all right. I've run across some metal heads in my day, and I'm sure that was a thing then too.
Yeah, since it's been a while since Brad's been back, and since this is pretty much like almost like his first con again, we thought we'd do an episode for those people that, you know, this may be their first con. So if you're a con veteran, I mean, you can still listen along. We may say some stuff you hadn't heard before, or you can always tweet at us or message us and make fun of us later for like, that was stupid.
I mean, I'll say maybe not your first con, but your first big con. I mean, you know, we've did an AcroCon, you know, the symposium, the comic book, you know, conventions and stuff like that. But to a con of this degree, it definitely takes some preparation. You don't just go into this blindly. And, you know, the other thing is to have a realistic expectation, I think. You know, that's one of the big things that, you know, I'm excited about, but also too, you know, just reading over the tracks, the list of bands, everything there is to see at con, I'm like, holy crap, it's so easy to overwhelm myself. So yeah. I need to come up with a game plan.
Yeah, I figure every Dragon Con is someone's first Dragon Con. So, you know, there's always something to learn about the con experience. Let's start off with, like you just said, the tracks. Dragon Con is 5 hotels and a convention center. It's spread over like, you know, like a 2 or 3 block area of, you know, Atlanta. Since there's so much space, there's always something going on 24 hours a day, pretty much. The con doesn't close. But, you know, all those things are broken up into tracks. So, you know, you can go find something that is specific to your fandom. Like I said, there's pretty much anything you want to nerd out over, there's going to be a track related to that thing. So, I mean, even if you don't want to, don't have a wide area of interests, you know, I guarantee there's going to be at least one track that you're going to want to get in on. I'd say one of my favorites has always been the X track. That's, it kind of started off as like an X-Files centric track, but then it's kind of evolved into the more, a lot of your cool science stuff, being a science nerd, always ends up in the X track. They've had, you know, actual rocket scientists come and do panels. They used to have the, whatever the head of the GBI, like, you know, Death Investigation Lab, used to come do a talk about crime scenes and stuff back in the day. So there's always some like cool, like, you know, not just, you know, X-Files related stuff, but then since we're getting a new X-Files, they may actually have some X-Files related, more X-Files related stuff this year. But, you know, you get more of the real world science stuff in that panel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what I can remember. I mean, I think there was a panel or something that I went and saw, and, you know, it was kind of related to NASA or something of that nature. And it was, you know, really interesting, you know, kind of like you touched on. I mean, you're going to have everything from alternate history, you know, steampunk's always a big thing. So that's something that I like to go and check out, mainly because I've already got costumes created and I don't have to spend a year trying to come up with something new.
Yeah, the alternate history track, which is actually run by DJ Dr. Q from the Ratchet Retrocast, that's his baby. And like I said, normally, a lot of your steampunk stuff ends up in that area. And they said he always has a lot of the steampunk bands and stuff playing. So yeah, definitely, if you're interested in any of that kind of, you know, alt history type stuff, go check that one out. One of the questions I always see people posting on the boards is, you know, do I have to have a costume? Will people look down on me if I don't wear a costume? And the answer to that question is no, because there's a ton of people in costume. There's a ton of like immaculate costumes, but then there's still people that are just in everyday street clothes. I mean, I might dress up occasionally, but I'm definitely not, I don't know how to sew or make stuff. So, I mean, most of the time I just come, you know, as I am, put on your favorite Star Wars t-shirt and you'll fit right in. No one's going to really, you know, look down on you.
Yeah. I mean, the last year I went, you know, I think Saturday, and for about half the day I went costumed. But the rest of the time, I mean, it was just an awesome experience just to kind of find a little bit of a hideaway on one of the balconies or something and do people watching. You know, one of the things that I enjoyed was, you know, you could kind of see, you know, everybody through the convention floor, and you could pinpoint and be like, oh, man, that's a really cool costume. And, you know, go and find that person and see if you can't get a photograph or, you know, talk to them a little bit about the costume or something. So,
yes, that's the thing. If you're... you aren't a cosplayer, this is kind of a good place to come and learn about cosplay. There's a costuming track specifically, and I know they got a bunch of guests from the like Face Off shows. So there's gonna be makeup artists, there's gonna be people who actually, you know, are making some of these great costumes. But then again, it's been in my experience, most of the people you see in costumes, you know, stop them, ask them questions. A lot of time they'll, you know, be happy to talk about the work they've put in, and you know, you may see something you like and give you some ideas to work on something for next Dragon Con.
Yeah, and I mean, there is a little bit of etiquette that goes along. I mean, there is a lot of people at Dragon Con. I mean, even it's been so long since I've been. I mean, there's probably only more people. It's more popular now than it has ever been. But, you know, if you're in a main hallway or a main, you know, you got a line of people trying to get by or something, you know, sidestep. Let people go by. Don't, you know, hold up 30, 40 individuals trying to get to a panel or something to get this photo, and make sure you have your camera ready. You know,
don't want to stop people to take photos in like the little habit trail sky bridges or in the main, like, you know, pathway. You know, you definitely want to, you know, try to, you know, see if they're willing to kind of move off to the edge. Or the best place for people watching is always the Marriott. That's kind of like the center of where everyone, especially like, you know, Friday, Saturday night, come to show off their costumes. And that, you know, that's going to be probably the best place to find like these photo ops if you want to take photos of some of these amazing cosplayers.
Yeah, and I mean, by and large, you know, a lot of people, one of the questions I saw is, you know, do people charge for photos and things of that nature? Most of your cosplayers, if you're polite and respectable, not so much. Now, your celebrity guests and stuff, yeah, they may potentially charge, you know, for some of those ops. So I think it's always a good thing to I think the year I went, you know, we had an issue where there was an ATM around one of the food courts or something. Anyway, it ran out of cash. So it was, you know, you pretty much had to have cash on hand. You know, there were some issues. This was really back before cell phones and, you know, stuff became popular. So it was kind of hard to use any form of credit card or debit card without being escorted to another area that could process that payment.
I think it's a little easier now. I know in the dealer's room, most of your dealers were able to, you know, process credit card orders. But like, say stuff like the gaming track, I'm not sure. You know, most of that stuff's like cash only. I know the, when you go to the, spend a few minutes talking, you know, we're going to get real random here if we don't kind of break it into segments.
Certainly.
But yeah, let's talk about, you know, the guests and, like you're saying, getting pictures of guests and stuff. Normally all that stuff is when the people are not out at panels, they are kind of in this one area, called the celebrity hall or something like that. But that's where you will go to get your autographs. I mean, trying to jump them when they're walking from a panel to panels, you know, we don't recommend that. You know, you see somebody walking by, you recognize them, say hi, but don't like try to stop them and monopolize their time. Like I said, if you want to go get an autograph and maybe say a few words to them, that do that in the autograph hall. And I said, pretty much everyone who's a guest at the con, when they're not on a panel, that's where you'll go to find them. And a lot of that may be cash. I don't know. It's been a while since I've, you know, the last few times I've actually saw somebody that I wanted to get their autograph, it was, you know, I paid cash for it because cash is king, and I don't have to like keep up with how much money I'm spending if I'm using my card.
Well, I mean, cash. I mean, like you said, this is kind of going to get random, but since we're talking about cash, you know, for me, I go and I say, all right, this is what I'm going to spend. And if I've got my credit card or something electronic, I'm not monitoring that stuff.
Yeah, you're going to go way off budget quick.
When, you know, $300 has disappeared from my wallet and I'm like, oh, I need to slow down.
Yeah, so that's definitely one of our pro tips there. That's the easiest way to keep up with your budget. And also, like I said, when these celebrities aren't signing autographs, they're normally in panels. If you go to one of these panels, they usually all have a question and answer session. Don't be afraid to get up in line. If you want to know something about, you know, their project they've been in, you know, there's no dumb questions. I mean, some people get embarrassed and are afraid to get up there and ask, but that's what they're there for. That's, you know, pretty much what we're all here for. There's really no dumb questions.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing too. I mean, with Dragon Con, I mean, you have first time people and you have veterans that have been going since, you know, Dragon Con's inception. So, you know, not everybody is on the same level of fandom or geekdom or anything. So, you know, I mean, especially me, I mean, I'm pretty much saying, hey, I'm a first timer at this point. So,
and if you, the one thing I can recommend, if you make it into John Barrowman's panels, he is absolutely hysterical. I mean, he is always just so willing with his time. We'll answer any question, no matter how ridiculous. And it's always a good time. The dude is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I will say, though, that as far as the questions, you know, you probably don't want to ask something super personal or something of that nature. I mean, you know, you kind of want it to be related to the track or, but like you said, you know, there's certain people that, yeah, whatever, you know, it's open forum, so I'll take it, you know, you try to, you know, wisecrack on me or put me in an awkward spot, then, you know, I'll pretty much play the trump card and...
Yeah, be respectful of their time so they'll come back next year and tell us all great stories again. And speaking of panels, the non-celebrity panels are always, you know, really great. That's, like I said, like with the cosplay stuff, you can go there. There'll be a panel probably on making a specific costume. Or, like, say, if you're a, not just in the cosplay track, but if you're a, say, you're a fan of Marvel and want to do an Avengers costume, I'm sure somewhere in the, you know, the panel, the track that relates to superheroes and stuff, they will probably have their own costuming panel at some point. And there's always stuff that you can learn that aren't celebrity stuff that, which, you know, the big celebrity things are always the big draw, but there's so many little small panels that are cool in these different, tracks. Like one of my favorite thing to go is the armory, area, which is usually in the like basement of the Hyatt, and it's just a room full of guns.
Yeah, I mean, the armory is probably, I mean, I would put that on my bucket list, that is by far one of the to have to go and experience, you know, places as Dragon Con.
And they usually have a panel room attached too, where they have like guys talking about like the history of warfare and you know, bigger discussions on like real world military stuff and weapons stuff, and you know, some kind of like, you know, sometimes there's like martial arts demos and all kind of whatever you want to learn about, there's usually a room to learn about it. And with that, I think the most important thing of panels is have a schedule. I mean, it's real easy to get overwhelmed at Dragon Con and not know where you want to go. So, you know, when you get that, the list of all the panels when you register, or what is way easier is download the Dragon Con app whenever it's updated.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of used a, which we didn't have the app the last time I went, but, you know, veterans and people that I've talked to this time around, you know, actually recommended using a combination of both.
You always get a printout thing that has, like, the schedule for the weekend and what's going on at all times. But with that app, you can also look up, you know, and it has pretty much, you can either look up, all right, I want to see what's going on in this track, or you can look up individual people, and it'll show you where they're going to be throughout the weekend when their actual panels are. But, you know, you can also just bring up, like, the day-to-day schedule, and it shows you what all's going on at a certain time. And just go through there and, like, all right, I want to see this. I want to see this. And you can just hit add to schedule, and then all that stuff is, like, saved in your app where you can bring up, all right, what panels have I decided I want to see at this time? And it'll have, you know, you can pretty much sit there a couple days before the con and pretty much program your whole want-to-see list out. And that makes it just a little bit easier to keep up with what you're doing.
You know, for first timers, I will say that, you know, unlock some of the other conventions and stuff like that I've been to, they actually clear out the panel room. So don't think you're going to sit through three panels to get to the celebrity panel, because they will remove you from the room and you will be in the back of the line.
Yeah. And generally they don't let people line up for the next panel until an hour before the panel starts. So there's no like camping out for 3 days just to see one dude. Show up at least an hour ahead of time if you really want to get into a panel. But a lot of times, especially some of the bigger ones, if you show up right at the last, you know, by the time the line gets in there, there may be a few open spots. If you are running late, you know, don't despair. There may still be room to get in.
I mean, you know, one of the benefits is, you know, obviously you and I and a group of people are going, but, you know, we're all pretty much going to be flying solo. So a lot of times what happens is midway through the track or whatever, you know, there's standing room or, you know, a seat will clear up. So if you're not a group of, you know, seven or eight people, then, you know, a lot of folks a lot of times will just hold up, you know, a, you know, hand and, you know, with a number, and that'll be how many seats are available next to that person and stuff. So, you know, that's another little bit of a pro tip that I learned the last time I was there.
And another thing, you know, bring something to keep yourself occupied. Like, so if you're going to be waiting in a line for an hour, you know, I guarantee the people next to you, you may not know them. Strike up a conversation. That's the best place to meet people and make new friends, because you already know you have something in common. You're both waiting in line for this panel, so you're obviously both fans of whatever thing you're trying to get in to see.
I remember there was a couple the last Dragon Con I was at, and they had coloring books. So, like, you know, six or seven people, like, in front of behind of them, they passed out coloring books. And, you know, everybody kind of colored a page while they were waiting in line. And, you know, if you wanted to share your contact information, you could write it on that page or something and, you know, exchange phone numbers or whatnot.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I've seen card games and stuff break out in line. There's always something like that going on. Let's take a minute and talk about navigation. Freaking, like you said, it's going to be a crowd. You just expect that going in, and don't try to go anywhere Saturday morning, because that's when, like, you know, the parade's going on, and yeah, it's you cannot navigate the streets of Atlanta during that time. But you know, like I said, there's five hotels. You got the Hyatt, the Marriott, and the Hilton are kind of in a row, and there are these sky bridges that connect.
Are we going to talk about hamster tubes?
Yeah, the hamster tubes that connect the Hyatt to the Marriott, and then also over to Peachtree Center, where the food court is. We'll talk about food here in a minute. But yeah, I said, you know, the high traffic times of the day, those, especially getting from the Hyatt to the Marriott, those tubes get real crowded. So if you need to be somewhere, I always suggest, like, if you don't want to, especially trying to go through the Marriott, if you don't want to get caught in the crowd, hit the streets. Go, you know, take the sidewalk. You know, usually bypassing the hotels and going, like, the street route may get you where you want to go a little bit faster than fight the crowd through the rabbit holes.
You know, this will be my first year of volunteering for Dragon Con, but, you know, like you said, the streets, and allow yourself, you know, 20, 30 minutes to get to and from. And if you're in costume, then you might want to allow yourself an hour or so in case you get stopped for photos and stuff. You know, just be prepared. And, you know, the biggest thing is to set a realistic expectation. I mean, you know, going into my very first Dragon Con, there were things that I really wanted to do, and there were other things that I thought would be cool if I couldn't do something. So I always had a backup plan because I knew I wasn't going to get to everything 100% of the time.
Yeah, usually when I make up my schedule, I might have two or three things that overlap in time, just because, like, you know, if I try to go see one celebrity and that panel's full, then I'm like, all right, cool, I can go hit this other thing.
Absolutely. So,
and the center of bad navigation is always the dealer's room, because, you know, you always want to go spend your money on the badass stuff, and the dealer room gets bigger, I think, every year. But this year is going to be the first year they've moved it from the regular America's Mart to the Building 2, which I think is like a bigger building, and it's pretty much going to be, like, last year it was in two different buildings on like two different floors, and it was like real hard to navigate. But now, like I say, it's going to be in the giant building. So from what I've heard, it's going to be the aisles will be wider, and it'll be more like straight shots. So,
I mean, I will say, when it comes to the dealers,
I mean, last year I needed GPS to find my way out of there. It was bad. So I'm hoping that's been improved this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think a bit of advice I can offer is I would get up early to go to the dealer's room, you know, right, be there right as they're opening up and stuff. That way the people that stayed out all night partying before, that had the hangovers, that don't want to deal with the early morning sunlight and stuff, you could kind of beat some of those crowds. And, you know, the other thing that I found is don't try to price shop too much. I mean, I found the prices that the vendors were offering were already discounted if you were to try to buy stuff from their websites and everything. Yeah.
And that's another thing. If you see something you want and you can't really afford it at that time, a lot of these people have websites, especially the t-shirt shops and stuff. There's been a lot of stuff I'm like, oh, I like that, it's cool, but oh, they don't have it in my size. Get a card from these people, you know. A couple weeks later, when you do have more time, more money, I mean, you can buy a lot of these items online later on. Or the day I did most of my shopping was like the last day on Monday, because by that time, most people were hitting the streets and trying to get home, and it was a little bit easier to get into the dealer's area and navigate around.
You know, I heard a lot of people talking about hitting up the dealer's room on Monday. And a lot of times you run across some steals just because folks don't want to have to reload their cars and take it to, you know, wherever state they might have drove in from, or, you know, flew in from, or something of that nature. So a lot of different strategies. I mean, the biggest thing is to have a little bit of an idea of what it is you're looking to accomplish, and, you know what, make the most of it. I mean, you know, there were panels and stuff that I wanted to see that I didn't get to, and, you know, I didn't let it discourage me. I just, you know, I mean, and part of the thing too is there were panels I really thought I wanted to see, and I would meet folks and start hanging out, strike up conversations, and all of a sudden that panel wasn't as priority as I thought it was.
And even, like, you know, give yourself, if you find you have some free time and you don't have a panel scheduled, go see something you wouldn't have normally seen. Yeah, try something new. I ended up going to one of the, like, voice actor panels just because I didn't have anything else scheduled at that time, and that turned out to be, like, a real good panel. It was cool. It was kind of like a, you know, talk about how to get into the voice-over industry and stuff like that. And
except now I got to listen to you try to, with a bad Austrian accent all the time.
Yes, do it now. Nah.
Yeah, my point exactly. I hope there's an advanced course.
maybe this year I need to take the second part of that class. Yeah. The intro class wasn't good enough.
So, I mean, I don't know, I kind of feel like we're repeating ourselves a lot, but, I mean, there's just such an expansive and immersive environment, and I don't know, for me, it's about the people more so than it is, you know, the panels themselves. I mean,
You can always meet, I mean, hell, I've heard of people, they met their wife, you know, at Dragon Con years ago. I mean, it's one of those things, like, it's a great place to meet new people that are, 'cause you are, like I said, you already know you have a shared interest, and it's a great place to learn new stuff. Like, you know, like I said, last year I hung around the podcasting track a lot because we had already kind of planned on doing this, and I was like, this is going to be my opportunity to learn at least a lot more of the technical side of things, and so it's not just a crazy idea. And you going up and talking to some of these, you know, seasoned podcasters and getting advice on what we can do to get our stuff started. And I said, Dragon Con was a great opportunity to gain that knowledge.
Absolutely. So, you know, we've talked about a lot about walking and interacting. I mean, one of the biggest things is if you're from out of state, it's hot. The humidity in the South sucks.
Yeah, they call it Hotlanta for a reason.
Yep. So if you're in a costume, keep that in mind. You obviously want to stay well hydrated. And unfortunately, alcohol does not count in this instance.
Yeah, let's talk a minute about like literal con survival and safety issues.
So first and foremost, I've heard it talked about over the ages, con crud. It is a real thing.
Yeah. And I'd say a lot of the cause of that is, you know, not getting enough sleep, not eating enough rest, eating like crap for like three days.
Well, I mean, not only that, but I mean, you know, it's con pie. It's another real thing. Drinks get shared a lot. So, yeah. You know, you're exchanging, you know, germs through that method, and alcohol doesn't kill everything, unfortunately. So,
oh, that's almost killed me a few times. So yeah, buy a freaking little thing of hand sanitizer or something, you know, clean your hands often, because like I said, we're all touching each other and things, and all kind of crazy stuff happens. And also they usually go by the 5-2-1 or 6-2-1
rule. Yeah, I mean, there's some folks, depending on your body type, I operated on the 5-2-1 method. So that was basically 5 hours of sleep, 2 meals a day, and 1 shower. And when I say meal, I'm not just talking about a granola bar or something of that nature.
That's another pro tip, is keep a like granola bar or Clif bar or something on you, because there's times when you're hungry and finding food may not be the best. They might not be very available at that time. Something to keep your energy up throughout the day. Hydration is important. And we're not talking about, you know, like I said, I usually take a go bag with me that's got like a couple bottles of water and a granola bar.
Yeah, I mean, you find ice machines and water fountains all over the place. Most of the panels have access to water.
Yeah, there's
water,
usually like a water, like a water bowl or, you know, tank in the back.
And I think one area that a lot of folks miss out is the con suite. You know, you can hit up the con suite a lot of times for free snacks, water, you know, stuff of that nature. And it can oftentimes be a little bit hard for newcomers to locate. I think, you know,
it's always on the second floor of the Hyatt. And like last year, my room was like one floor up. So it was very close to the con suite. And let's talk a minute about, you know, eating at Dragon Con. I said, that's a good place to get a free snack. You know, they always have drinks and food, and they like make sandwiches and stuff up there. So if you're in a pinch, it's a good place to go get a quick bite to eat if you need to. Your main food options at Dragon Con is the Peachtree Center food court. That's pretty much where everyone ends up. Some of the hotels have actually restaurants in them.
There's Chick-fil-A now.
I usually eat breakfast at the Hyatt restaurant.
You know, there's
they usually have a breakfast buffet during Dragon Con. That's pretty good. The thing is, there's 60,000 of us there. So if you're trying to hit it like peak lunchtime, you may not be able, you're going to be waiting a while, or even if you get food, you may be standing in a corner eating because there's nowhere to sit down. Another thing, pack your own. Especially if you have a room, you know, bring a cooler with some sandwich stuff. I mean,
a lot of people
think easiest way to get fed at Dragon Con.
I mean, we rented a refrigerator, and a lot of folks, you know, they're like, "Oh my gosh, that's so, you know, expensive or whatever." They see it as a waste of money, but it was awesome. I mean, we had sandwich meats, we had, you know, water, all kinds of stuff just readily available.
Yeah.
And
I mean, last year I just brought a loaf of bread and some peanut butter and jelly. Yeah, I went out to eat a few times, but I mean, that's a good, easy way to spend money. And I know there's always somewhere to sit down and eat in my room. I'm not having to fight for a table at the food
usually
court.
Usually. I mean, there was this one room party, I recall. But
yeah. Another thing I recommend while you're there is to go to Hooters at least once during the weekend, because, I mean, it's right next to the hotels. And they fully embrace the Dragon Con app. So all the girls are in costumes. It's not the normal Hooters outfits. I think my waitress last year was dressed as like Baby Girl from Sucker Punch. And there was a She-Hulk. One girl's painted all. I mean, it's crazy. And there's a Uma Thurman from Kill Bill in there. It's always worth seeing at least once going to the Hooters and checking out the costumes that year.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the biggest thing. I mean, I'm the type of person, I enjoy people watching and, you know, striking up conversations with folks. So, I mean, to me, that's what con is really all about.
And if you're a beer nerd, Max Lagers, which is pretty much across the street from the Hyatt, Like I said, it's a microbrewery. They got their own house brands of beers you can try. It's pretty good. It's pretty cool.
A little insider tip: if you folks are fans of pork, the pork chops there are absolutely delicious.
And the jalapenos are really freaking hot. That was always the con version. It was like, oh, it's your first Dragon Con? You've got to try a jalapeno. Because I swear those things were like freaking ghost peppers. They were not hot regular jalapenos.
I think that was the very first thing you said when we got our room and everything else squared away. It's like, all right, now that you're in, it's hot pepper challenge time.
Yeah, I tried. They were ridiculously hot for a jalapeno. I don't know why. I mean, it was fresh and still had the seeds in it too. So yeah, it was bad. But yeah, you definitely want to try to eat something at Dragon Con.
And I think probably one of the biggest things that we didn't talk about is buy a lanyard if you don't have your own and keep your badge on you 100% of the time.
Yeah, because I mean, the badge you get at registration usually just got like a little clip to put on your shirt. And those things get knocked off, especially in the crowds and stuff, and you don't want to lose your badge. So if you don't have a lanyard, they usually sell them in the Dragon Con store. But yeah, bring a lanyard if you have one. It's a whole lot easier to keep up with than just trying to clip that thing on your belt.
Absolutely. So we got a couple of lanyards already hanging up, so I think we're good.
I think I still have my Dragon Con lanyard from last year.
That's what we should do. We should start a collection of lanyards.
And that's one thing. Another thing too, if you say you waited like we did to the last minute and didn't get the cheap tickets last year, and you're thinking about going last minute, you don't want to spend the $150. They're always looking for staff at Dragon Con. Like I said, we've both volunteered for security this year. Basically, they ask you to work a minimum of 20 to 25 hours, and if it's your first year, you usually have to pay a $20 fee, but then every year after that, once you've proven that you're going to come and do your shifts, it's free. So like I said, you pay your $20 is a lot better than $150.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing too is if you go to Con this year and you're like, "Man, I definitely want to do this next year." Go ahead, start, reserve your room ahead of time. It doesn't cost you anything. The fares are going to be much cheaper. You're going to get guaranteed a spot. It's so immense that it's crazy, when I'm like, man, we got to prepare for Con next year, and we haven't even left this Con.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, if you fail at the getting the great room rush, because they open this stuff up in like October, and the stuff sells out within a couple hours. There's several Facebook pages, the Dragon Con Room room group. I think there's a Dragon Con Room Live Journal. And there's always people that did get lucky enough to get a room that are looking for roommates. I mean, that's how we got a room, was somebody that had a spot. And we only did that like a month ago. So, I mean, there's still people, every day I see people looking for roommates. Or since you have to buy your room so far in advance, there's a few people that, oh, something's come up, now I can't go to DragonCon. I'll transfer my room to somebody.
I was talking to one person, and he's like, yeah, I had a room reserved, and I had to let it go because, his sister or somebody decided to get married the weekend of Con. So he's like, no appreciation for the geeks. that stuff kind of sounds basic, but, I mean, it's good advice to get you through the Con. And the biggest thing is you don't want to be that person on Saturday and you're drained. I'm the type of person that once my body gets to a certain point, it pretty much starts shutting down on its own. I become very irritable and things of that nature. And that's not the person you want to be during Con.
It's nice to have a place just to go and recharge. Because I tried going without a room and commuting one year, and it just sucked because it was like, there was no way to get off the floor. There was nowhere to get, like you said, when you have a room, it's usually, you're always a place to just go and chill for a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know. I'm looking forward to this year. I mean, we're going to have some of the comforts of home and everything else. So it's going to be a much more enjoyable experience, especially now that I've had an opportunity to talk to veterans such as yourself and some of the other folks that will be coming up later on in this segment. The other thing is I'm out of shape now. So, I mean, we'll be frank about it. So shoes are highly important. They yes. will not make or break your costume 99.9% of the time unless you're a super hardcore, you know, cosplayer or something. But, you know, don't buy shoes and, you know, con be the first time you wear them. You want to wear those things? Start now. Wear them to the grocery store, around the house. You want to be comfortable.
Yeah, comfortable shoes is key at con.
And maybe some pain meds or something too, you know, to get rid of some of those aches and pains from being on your feet if you're not accustomed to that.
Yeah, because like I said, it's you do a lot of walking because, like I said, it's spread out over 5 hotels. It's and another thing too, we spoke about navigation. There's so many people in those hotels that sometimes the elevator, it always seems like, especially the Hyatt, the elevator trying to get in that thing is just a pain in the ass. So if you can take the stairs, do it. I highly recommend you're going to get where you want to go a lot faster if you can just, you know, jump down a couple flights of steps.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say, you know, just get on the elevator going up, ride it to the top and go down. But, you know, then again, practice etiquette. You know, if there's somebody in a wheelchair or something like that, give up your space. You know, I mean, I think that's one thing that will make con a much more enjoyable experience. Just have a little bit of decency and respect. And I think it just goes back to the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So if you don't want to be, you know, a dick or get shafted or something of that nature, don't be that way toward another individual.
And let's talk a little bit about Dragon Con After Dark.
So I want to go ahead and preface this. I don't care how scantily clad, whether it be male, female, or whatever, just because somebody's dressed revealing doesn't give you the right to just go up and start groping and touching.
Yeah, I mean, there's always signs that say cosplay is not consent. Unless you see me, my cosplay is consent. Feel free to grope me. But like I said, yeah, be respectful of people. Do not be, as Will Wheaton says, don't be a dick. But yeah, Dragon Con, it is a 24-hour-a-day event, and things get a little crazy after 7, 8 o'clock. So if you have impressionable children, once the panels are kind of done for the day, you may want to take them back to the hotel room, because that's when the drunks come out, is after dark.
That's when your parties kicks off, and we'll talk a little bit more about the parties and stuff like that later, because there's a lot of music, a lot of events and stuff that happen that are, you know, truly an awesome experience that I recommend folks to go and check out, but like I said, if you got the kiddos with you,
yeah,
it might not be the time or the place.
I've heard there's even an adult origami panel that I may have to go check out just because I'm like, what the hell is adult origami?
I mean, I could give you a description, but I don't think an explicit tag gives us.
But I mean, there is, like I said, there's Dragon Con always has a burlesque show at one point during the weekend. There's the Pinups by the Pool party, which was pretty cool. I went to. And just like I said, even if you're not going to one of these official events, there are so many parties at Dragon Con. I mean, hell, just the being the floor of the Marriott at the Pulse Bar is its own party. But there's several official parties. If you go onto Facebook, there is the Dragon Con's parties Facebook page. We'll try to keep you up to date on all the official and unofficial parties. Like I said, if you meet some people at the con, yeah, like I said, I've been to the official raves and stuff, and I've been to a few room parties. I mean, there's no shortage of parties at Dragon Con.
We were talking about creature comforts before. This is up time I think we should bring this. If you're the type of person and you need some downtime to relax and you're trying to sleep, bring earplugs. Especially if you don't know who you're rooming with and somebody's snoring loudly or there's parties going on or something, just do yourself that bit of justice.
Yeah, and yeah, like I said, there's weird stuff happens at Dragon Con After Dark.
Do they still do kilt blowing?
Yes, I'm not sure what night it is, but yeah, there's always the kilt blowing event with Jenny Breeden and leaf blower harassing men in kilts, which I will have my kilt this year. So I've never been to that event. I may have to go.
Wait, I thought that was the only required Dragon Con wardrobe was, yes, you know, kilt. A kilt and at least, you know,
Yeah, I had some
one
guy...
One album of Crux Shadows. I mean...
yeah, last year I had some guy stop me on the street and be like, hey man, what are you dressed as? I see a lot of people in kilts. I'm like, dude, I'm just wearing a kilt. It's very popular around here. I'm not actually dressed up in anything. Like, I'm wearing like a freaking Netherworld t-shirt and my kilt, and this dude thought I was in some kind of costume. I'm like, nah, bro, it's Dragon Con. Everybody wears a kilt.
It's not even Dragon Con. It's any day ending in Y is a good day for a kilt.
But, yeah. An example of weird stuff that we have seen at Dragon Con. I end up in a room party with a bunch of Elvis impersonators one year. There was a couple Stormtrooper Elvises, too.
You sure it was Dragon Con and not Vegas?
No, it was Dragon Con. I'm in a room full of Elvis impersonators with a guy in a cheerleader outfit, and we're drinking some kind of blue liquor out of a fake toilet bowl. So they made this drink that would look like toilet water. It was... Another one, like I said, one of our friends told us this story, who was working security in the middle of the night, which I'm signed up for some of the all-night shifts, so I'm sure I'm going to see something weird. He goes to get into an elevator at the Marriott. The door opens. There's a table in the elevator, and there's all these dudes playing poker with a bottle of absinthe in the middle of the elevator. So, like I said, you will see weird shit at Dragon Con. Just be prepared for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Dragon Con is where I first got my big introduction into the world of furries. I had not really heard that terminology and didn't really realize it was a thing until Dragon Con, and I was like, yep, this is definitely a thing.
Furries and the bronies, man. And like we were saying, things going on 24 hours a day. If you don't want to party, normally in the basement of the Hyatt, they have all the video rooms, and they're usually playing, like, I mean, I've seen some, like, movies get premiered there at Dragon Con before they're actually released. But they have rooms playing.
Well, I mean, dude, we found down a YouTube hole just watching, like, 2 or 3 hours of Dragon Con TV.
Yeah, that's another thing to see at Dragon Con. But, yeah, down there in the video rooms, I mean, there's rooms that are playing, like, old anime stuff, like old episodes of Doctor Who, just, you know, movies, all kind of stuff. So, you know, if you do stay up late like we do and you don't, you know, necessarily want to go to a party, hit up some of the video rooms and, you know, enjoy, you know, whatever geeky thing you want to check out.
That, or, you know, one of the escapes is the game room itself. You know, a lot of times you can hit it up. It's not superly overly crowded. I mean, you just got to be careful, because I was talking to a guy and he basically was like, yeah, there's no windows or anything. So I went in thinking I was going to play a couple of games of Magic, and 16 hours later, like...
And also, Dragon Con's a great place to hear music, too. I know Brad's our resident music nerd. There's a lot of... Like, there's concerts going on every night. Not only every night, there's usually a few concourse stages out behind the Hilton, or I think there's one in the Hyatt, too, where there's bands just playing, you know, there on the con floor off and on all day. And then there's the all-night raves that are going on. There's, like, so many, you know, like, just dance parties that go on throughout the night. I think one of the big ones I've heard recommended is the last party at Alderaan was a big one. I went to that one last year, and it was a pretty good DJ spot. I know Q has a couple steampunk music events
out, because we've used some of their music in some of our intros and stuff like that in past episodes. But Abney Park is a really awesome steampunk band that... You know, I encourage folks to go out and check.
Yeah, I know Frenchie and the Punk's going to be there, too. So, yeah, if you want to check out some steampunk music, there's always some good stuff. I know freaking Crux Shatter and Voltaire is, like, there every freaking year, so.
Yeah, one that jumped out at me was Here Comes the Mummies, and it's described as basically terrifying funk from beyond the grave. So I'm a big horror buff.
That's interesting.
So, you know, I was like, you know what? That's right up my alley. I mean, you might get a little bit of that kind of electro swing, but with a, you know, cynical twist on it or something, or, you know, some of the more macabre type things. So
the events Q does, I think it's the Aether Lounge, which is usually, it might even be Thursday, and then they have, like, the Mechanical Masquerade, I think, usually on Sunday. That's always a good place to check out some of the steampunk music. And like I said, there's concerts literally going on. Concerts or DJ night parties going on every night. So when you get your schedule, check out what kind of music's playing. You know, go check out some stuff. And if you think you can sing yourself, the Trek Track always does Klingon karaoke a couple nights during the con. So if you want to get your karaoke on, you can always do that over in the Trek Track rooms.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll stay far away from a karaoke mic. That's your forte, my
shit,
friend.
Shit, no, man. I'm going to drop some rhymes and stuff.
I know you will. So.
Is there any other band you're particularly waiting to see?
You know, a lot of.
And there's also the drum circles.
Well, one of the bands, Tribe One, not really a band, but, you know, we've used his A to Z Marvel rap, and, you know, he's basically
he's going to be at. What party is it? It's, I think it's like the DJ mashup party. Might be Sunday. I can't remember what night it is, but yeah, Tribe One's going to be a guest at that party, so you can see some Tribe.
So, I mean, that's another one of the things I'm really excited about.
And there's even a few, like, off-site events. Some of the nightclubs in the area will have, like, a Dragon Con night where you can go out and party with your fellow Dragon
Con. I think they were doing, like, a Dragon Con at the Aquarium this year or something like that.
They always have the Aquarium night, too.
So, I don't know. Go look at some fish, hang out with like-minded geeks and whatnot. I mean, I'm sure it's to be a good time.
And another thing that always happens at Dragon Con is the pie. If you've never been to Dragon Con is the pie is the unofficial official drink of Dragon Con. Everyone has their own recipe.
Including your friendly cigar nerds.
Yeah. Have you decided on a recipe you're going to try?
Yeah, but that's 2BD.
So if you see him out and about, you know, yeah, ask him to sample some pie.
Yeah, I'll have a few flasks on me. I mean, also having a room, I'm sure we'll have... quite a few jars to hand out to folks and everything. I mean, if we can't get any branded apparel or anything of that nature, then maybe we'll just give them the cigar nerd, rendition of pie.
Raffle off some pie. Yeah, because I've some of my friends have been prepping their pie, and I have gone around and sampled a few experiments, and yeah, there's some good recipes out there. Don't be afraid. That's the one thing. Like I said, everyone is like real generous at Dragon Con. I mean, there's always people willing to, you know, let you sample something.
Watch out for those squirt guns of Everclear. That is not water.
Yeah, experience there. Like, there's somebody walking around with a squirt gun full of liquor. That's when it gets real interesting. There's some strange stuff happens on the smoking deck at the Hyatt.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing too. Is, you know, we talked a lot about official events, but there's a lot of, you know, unofficial meetups too. That, you know, folks have like. Man, we've been, you know, all coming to con for 15 plus years, or, you know what, we all have this in common, so let's just do a meetup out here or something of that nature. So there's a lot of unofficial stuff that happens where just like-minded folks get together, socialize, share experiences, drinks, cigars, whatever the case is. So
yeah, definitely watch your the Facebook groups and stuff. That's where a lot of people make announcements, and that's a lot of ways to keep up with what's going on at con is just checking out the different Facebook groups. I know, like I said, as long as my battery in my phone lasts, I will be updating our Facebook and Twitter. So if you want to come hang out with the cigar nerds, send us a message. If I'm able, I will respond, because sometimes that's one of the there's so many people there that the cell towers get a little crowded. So sometimes your phones do not work. So if you're in a group of people, maybe you'd be even plan like a meetup spot. Like, all right, if I haven't heard from you in 3 hours, let's meet at this this spot, because sometimes your cell phones, the communications is not going to be the best in the world.
I'm just going to go straight up old school, and we'll just do a shortwave radio.
we'll bring smoke signals. or get us some of those cheap walkie-talkies at Walmart. I need like the Dick Tracy freaking communicator watched.
That'd be cool.
Well, I think that'll about wrap up what we have to say. One of the things we briefly touched on was gaming at Dragon Con. I mean, gaming at Dragon Con is a huge thing. Not only the official gaming stuff, but, you know, gaming and, you know, have people bring games to the rooms and stuff and gaming breakout. So we're going to talk a little bit about gaming at Dragon Con with our resident game designer, Michael McGinnis. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. And now we're talking about gaming at Dragon Con, and we have back a former guest, our official game designer buddy, Mike McGinnis. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you for having me, guys.
You may remember him from way, way back in our gaming episode we did.
That wasn't way, way back. All right, it was a ways back.
Yeah, I don't even remember what episode number that was.
It was like December or something, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah.
I think that was when we were in the single digits.
Yeah, it might have been. We're getting old.
You're telling me. I still haven't made enough to retire yet.
So anyway, another big thing to do at Dragon Con, other than the random stuff we've already talked about, is the huge gaming culture education playing at Dragon Con. How much have you got into that, Mike?
A fair bit. It's the gaming has really exploded Dragon Con the last few years, and they've got what a lot of people essentially call the Virgin Dungeon.
Yeah,
every year, and it's you go in, you pay $5, and you get open gaming all weekend long. Say they just have this gigantic library of board games. You go in, there's always somebody willing to play. So it is fantastic if you want to get into new games, try them out, because it gives you access to a lot of board games you wouldn't normally be able to get to.
Yeah, according to their information, they've got a little over 400 games in their library. So if there's anything that you've wanted to try and never had a chance, you can usually find it down there in the dungeon.
It's about 390 more than we currently have.
Yeah. And all that stuff is located on the Galleria section of the Hilton, which is pretty much the basement, which is this giant room. It's like the entire footprint of the hotel is connected into one giant room, and it is full of people gaming from like 9 in the morning to 2 in the morning is like the official hours, but there's people down there just about all night doing something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much gaming going on. You'll see people playing Werewolf in different hotels in the hallways.
I usually run into those people in the basement of the Hyatt. Right near the parking deck. That's where there's always if you see a bunch of people sitting on the floor with their eyes closed, that's the Werewolf group. If you want to join in, that's going on all the time. But especially like during the night when nothing else is going on, you'll find the indoor kids down in the basement playing Werewolf.
Oh yeah, it's constant. Just once again, the gaming culture, the way it's really been absorbed into Dragon Con. There's also a lot of panels. I've gone to a couple that were like designing your dungeon for Dungeons and Dragons, or here are a couple game designers talking about different methods they approach for game design. So it's pretty consistent, and it's really grown in the past probably 10 years, I'd say.
Yeah, that's something I'd be interested in checking out, even if you don't get into actually playing some games, but being able to see more of that design, being able to talk to the designers and then the builders and find out more about what goes into making the games, or being able to see stuff that's not out yet that's fixing to come to the market, getting kind of that early preview. And you'll even see that a lot down in the gaming room. Some people will be playing live demos of their upcoming games. So like I said, you can really get a chance to get your hands on stuff early.
Word. Yeah, I don't know. I'd be curious to go down, just like you said. I mean, to experience games that I will probably be into that I don't even realize exist, or some of the micro games and things of that nature that probably don't get a whole lot of, retail space in most stores, or maybe you can't even find in stores. Maybe they're Kickstarter campaigns or something. So
yeah, and you're seeing that because the library, a lot of it is donations. So a lot of times if people want to get their name out, they'll give a copy of their game. So you'll be seeing a lot of things that, wouldn't be hitting a store shelf. I'm actually hoping to donate one of mine here pretty soon. So,
and that's also a cool thing. If you happen to come across some of these demos, is being able to play the game with the person who designed it is there to explain, their passion behind this. And it's always more interesting, being able to play the game when its creator is there to if it sucks, you can give them shit, or if it's great, you...
Or just to make sure that you're playing properly.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, how many times have we played a game and then looked up the instruction and be like, oh yeah, we weren't allowed to do that
move. I'm sure that happened the first 4 games of Exploding Kittens.
Oh. And also they have, not only is it open gaming, which, like I said, for $5 you have access to the library or whatever, but also throughout the they have like sanctioned tournaments of different games, because it's not only board games, but they also have miniatures there. They have your Magic, your collectible card gaming. And if you go to their official website, which is gaming@dragoncon.org, they have a schedule of all the open play games, but also you know, all the official scheduled gaming sessions and like tournaments and stuff, and you can go on there and register to play a certain game. Most of your tournaments, it looked like their entry fee was $3 to $5, and that usually goes toward, because the tournaments usually have some kind of prize, whether it's, you know, a copy of a game or credits to go spend in the dealer hall or whatever. So that's something you can definitely get into if you want to go play in like some kind of official tournament, or like I said, but there's plenty of just open gaming time if you just want to go. You get bored seeing panels, you want to go fuck off for an hour or two. It's a good place.
I just want to escape and retreat from the heat and the mask chaos. And I mean, for me, I remember, I mean, golly, this is going back quite a few years ago, but just a way to go and chill and relax. I mean, just kind of hit the reset button.
That's definitely a cool place to hang out. The other thing, though, it's kind of like, you know, and you go to Vegas and there's no windows or clocks on the wall, so you don't know how long you've been there. One of the guys I was rooming with last year was a big, like, Magic player, and he disappeared, like, all day one day, and then, like, showed up back at the hotel room, like, 2 in the morning. And he's like, I was like, what happened? He's like, I went down to the gaming room for, like, to play a couple quick hands, and next thing I know, it's, like, 2 in the morning. I don't know how long I was down there. I just got kind of lost.
Yeah, and with that heavy gaming culture, you also see that the tournaments are pulling in a lot more people than they were. I went and played a Magic tournament myself a few years ago, and then the guy I was playing, I don't remember his name, but he had won like the Grand Prix a few years before. And here I am just schlepping it up and playing against, you know, one of the top Magic players at the time. And it just
that's awesome.
Just because it's that center of gaming that it's slowly becoming.
I mean, that's one thing I like about gaming culture in general. I mean, it's just a big melting pot, a cesspool, you know.
Yeah, it's a great place to meet new people at the con, too, especially, you know, if you're a shy person and you don't want to just walk up to random strangers. You go down the gaming room, check out a game, and I'm sure there's gonna be 4 or 5 people like, yeah, we'll jump in and try this game with you. And I mean, it's a great way to, for like, you know, less social people, just to, you know, meet new people that weekend.
Yeah, of course at Dragon Con you just get pressed into people at every turn, so
you're gonna get very, very close.
Yeah,
very quickly
make friends in line. That's another thing. I said the schedule has not been posted yet, so we don't know the official schedule, but once that's posted, you know, not only will they have these gaming sessions, but then they'll also have like official panels, like Mike said, about design and whatnot, and all that stuff will be in the gaming track when you start looking at your con schedule. Is there anything you're looking forward to maybe playing at getting your hands on down there at Dragon Con?
There are a lot of new games that have been coming out lately. There's a 40K space battle game, Space Armada, I think the name of it was. Just gigantic ships and space battles. Something I'd probably never buy myself, but if I get a
something
chance,
something that's cool and playtest anyway.
Yeah, so. I'd love to just give it a test drive. You know,
I'm looking forward to if they have, because I know there's usually somebody playing X-Wing, and I'm going to try to get into one of those tournaments. But the Star Wars Armada game, where it's like X-Wing, but now it's the capital ships instead of the small fighters and stuff. So I've not had a chance to play that yet because it's freaking like $100 for the base set, and I'm like, I want to try that one before I drop money on it.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I'm just looking forward to going around with some blank cards against humanity and just seeing what kind of effed up answers and things we can get.
And that's another thing, too. I mean, if you're out and about, not only is there, like I said, the official gaming area, but usually people bring, like, some cards against humanity. You might find a table at one of the bars, or, you know, there's people, you know, in the hallways playing games and stuff here and there. So you can always pretty much find a game as long as you keep your eyes open. And
I'm looking for a sweet game of Hacky Sack. You can find me in the corner chilling.
Probably one of those there somewhere. And like I said, we've talked a lot about the, you know, board games and card games, but, you know, they also have video gaming tracks. There's usually, like I said, the basement area is all your board games, card games, whatnot. But then the upstairs of the Hilton, they have the video gaming track, which is usually everything from like coin op games to World of Warcraft, big online games, to just your regular, you know, home arcade games.
Yeah, and you've been seeing there's been a big explosion of the arcade games again, because I was just at MomoCon and they had 40 arcade games out there.
Nice.
So there's been sort of a resurgence in the arcade games in the con areas, because we've been seeing also a lot of unique ones from Japan again. I played one where it was about flipping tables. You get angry at people and you flip the table at them. And there was a line of 20 people to play this game.
I mean, I could see that being a great stress relief. You know, if we had more games like that with people more accepted, I guess we'd have less mass shootings and more violent outbursts.
Yeah, you got to get your violent outburst in the gaming world. It's a whole lot easier. Well, what we have here, since, like, you have anything new you're working on, anything you want to promote while you're here?
Well, now that you mention it, I do have a game that that I'm currently designing called We Built This City. I've checked it. It's not trademarked, so I can use it. I can't use the song though. But it's essentially like Sim City, but it's multiple people building the same city. So you might build an industry, but you know, are you building it right in the middle of my neighborhood? You ass, you know, building trash dumps next to my offices. So there's a little bit of that going on.
Why does the city have 50 cigar shops?
Oops.
So looking at launching that a little bit later this year if all goes well.
Cool. You got any more gaming questions, Brad?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of questions. I just have more anticipation on, you know, being able to get out there and actually play some games and you know, intermingle with some folks.
As the Dragon Con rookie, since it's been a while, anything you're definitely wanting to try down there?
Yeah, everything, because I know it. Everybody says it can't be done. I'm going to be that one person.
I tell you, the one thing I saw last year I was really excited about, and I don't know if it's going to be there this year, was the Battle Pods. Because it was an old game that we used to play all the time at Dave & Buster's, where it's a Mech Warrior-based game. But they have these, they look like giant like hockey pucks on their sides. But once you open them up, it looks like you're inside the cockpit of one of these giant Mech Warrior robots. And they've got like 8 or 10 of them linked. And you're having like a free-for-all, you know, battle to the death with these Mech Warrior machines. And it's like, I mean, there's all kind of computer readouts. You can customize your loadout and stuff and really, like, you know, personalize your machine if you want to spend
the
time.
Almost like a life version of Mech Warrior then.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty... And what the cool part is, once the game is over, you get a play-by-play, like, printout of the battle. And it, like, it gives you, like, a description of how the battle unfolded and how badly you got blown up.
That's pretty awesome.
All right, well, that will be right back. All right, that was Mike's details on gaming at Dragon Con. So what do you think of this cigar as we wrap it up?
You know, this cigar, you were picking up on the spice initially. It took me down to about the second, third or so, and the spice really came out. I mean, this is a fairly complex and at the same time well-balanced cigar. I mean, it was...
Yeah, it definitely started off medium, but they got a little bit more full flavor toward the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost like two cigars for me because, it, you know, it started off, you know, just kind of nutty and, you know, a little bit of, you know, like you said, the coca aspects of things. But then, you know, once the spice kicked, it was like, holy crap, this is a whole new cigar at this point. And
should we tell people what we've been pairing the cigar with?
Yeah, I guess you can let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, well, we've decided to get into home brewing, and our first batch of homebrew has finally been ready to try. So we've been sampling our first brew with this cigar, and we made a bourbon barrel stout. Like the first time we tried it, we tried it was a little cold and it wasn't really standing out. So this time we let them warm up a lot more before we tried it, and there's so much more flavor now, and it just paired excellent with this cigar. So yeah, that's something. I mean, this cigar, if you're wanting to drink a good stout, I think this would pair well with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we'll have you know, I'll take a case or so of you know, some of the bottles down, so if folks want to have a beer with us or something, we can let them in on, you know, what we brewed. You know, once again, it's a community effort. So
so is there anything that in your mind that you may want to know that we haven't answered yet? You got any final questions before we wrap this up?
I don't know. At this point, I'm pretty much just keeping an open mind. I mean, I know what I'm on the scale a decade ago, what I was getting myself into. This is going to be a whole nother animal. So I'm trying not to have too many expectations or, you know, anything of that nature. I mean, you know, this episode was just as good for my own personal knowledge as it is for, you know, anybody that's, I mean, you might be a con veteran, but if you haven't did Dragon Con or a con to this scale, it's a whole different animal. So,
Yeah, we'll see how you should, you know, we'll do a wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to do our
post con episode, and we'll see how well you survived. See if you learned any lessons at this time. So we'll wrap this up, and we'll be right back with Blowin' Smoke.
Stay tuned.
And welcome back to the podcast. This is our Blow and Smoke segment where we talk to cool people that have cool things going on. And welcome to the podcast, James of the DragonCon Cigar Group, or as y'all on the web knows him, Ignacio Moon. How's it going, sir?
Oh, not bad, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right. So tell people a little bit about, you know, the DragonCon Cigar Group. What is this all about?
Well, the way the group started was just that, you know, I've been going to Dragon Con, I think, 6 years, going on seven now, and it was basically thinking, I'd like to see if I could get together, seeing all the thousands of fan groups that are out there, you know, to find a bunch of guys or people who just wanted to get together, have a good smoke, and I just started talking in the other groups, the official Dragon Con group and all this, and asking people, hey, does anybody want to get together, have a couple of smokes? So four of us got together last year, and we said it'd be a great idea to just have a presence on Facebook that we could start gathering other people around, and it's blossomed from there. As of now, we've got, and let me check, I'll tell you, I think we're up to 148 members.
Nice.
Today.
So, yeah, that was the thing about, you know, the last couple of years tried to bring a couple cigars, and I might run into one or two people in the various smoking areas, but it's kind of nice that, you know, we've built something for all of us to kind of communicate and try to coordinate a smoking group, so we're not just, you know, flying solo when we're out there. We can, you know, find some like-minded nerds and fire up some good cigars.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, we basically thought, let's do this. Every other group has a meetup, so we started scouting around and looking, trying to get an area where we could do our meetup. And we basically found Trader Vic's at the Hilton. They have an outdoor patio where it's, you know, cigar friendly, where we could get over there together. So we put the little event together, and that's Dragon Con's Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. is when we're going to be there. And out of 148 people in the group, I've got about, at this point, 56 RSVPs, and the local rep from Perdomo Cigars, Chris Harper, is going to be there. So we're going to raffle off cigars, raffle off swag, and he's going to, you know, talk about Perdomo Cigars and, you know, fandom and the usual stuff you do when you're getting there. So being Dragon Con, drinking cigars, having fun, and getting together with like-minded people.
Yeah, and Thursday night's a good time to do, like, that kind of pre-hard Dragon Con get together, because I mean there's not a whole lot going on Thursday night except for some parties and some meet and greets and stuff like that. There's not really any panels and stuff that I'm aware of during that time, so it's a good time, you know, get there Thursday, unpack your rooms, come out, you know, have a smoke.
Well, I mean, it'd be good for guys like me too, that, you know, this would be my first Dragon Con and golly, probably close to a decade now, and you know, it's going to be culture shock to see what it's progressed into, you know, versus where it was a decade ago when I was last there.
Well, yeah, every year I've seen it grow. It's like from my first year, I was just in shock at how much fun it was and the dynamic of Dragon Con. You know, it was always going on a 24/7 party, as opposed to, you know, your convention center stuff where it's like, oh, 7 o'clock. It's done, go home. So there's always going to be something going on, and, you know, try to get in through the entirety of the weekend, you know. Hey, guys, let's get together. Let's have a smoke. And there's a lot of guys there who are just absolutely let's do it. And we sit there and talk smokes. We've traded off smokes, you know, all kinds of stuff. So it's a and then in the end, it's just not just that. It's just your fandom and a passion for cigars together. So it actually kind of goes hand in hand.
Oh, yeah. And that not only that, you know, occasionally you'll run into one of the guests there that are smokers. I know Tim Miller told me a story, and he was one of the guys that first told me about the Dragon Con cigar group, about him hanging outside smoking, and this, like, you know, large black dude came up to him and started talking about cigars. He's like, wait a minute, I know you from somewhere. And it was, like, Christopher Judge from Stargate. So you'll, yeah. you there's no, you know, you run into a lot of, like, you know, brothers and sisters of the leaf that, you know, you had no idea. Yeah, and that's something, you know, we all find in common. So it doesn't matter where, what background you're from. You're like, oh, you like cigars? I like cigars. Let's be friends.
Exactly. That's one of the things. It's like when you meet certain celebrities, Dana Snyder, who's Master Shake on Aqua Teens, or I think Granny on the Squidbillies, he's another one. We sat there and discussed.
He is awesome, too.
Yeah, I saw him at another con, and we started discussing, because right there was when Gorka came out with the Abuela, which is a rum-infused premium. And yeah. We sat there and just kept going with cigars. People would stop him for a second, take a photo, and then he'd turn back around. Oh, yeah, this is great. What do you smoke? This and that. So it was a little commonality that you have with somebody that grows into something different.
Yeah, and I like the fact that, yeah, this is, you know, we've kind of, you know, put together this official event. You don't see a lot, you know, a lot of cons, you know, at a certain hour, everything pretty much wraps up. But Dragon Con really goes on 24 hours a day. I mean, yeah. We put together a little smoking event at when we went to AnacroCon this year and tried to organize a few. And we ended up getting a pretty, maybe had like 10, 15 people show up. But, it, you know, you can pretty much always find a cigar smoker in a crowd if, you know, yeah, they may be like a closet cigar smoker and don't realize that, you know, there's like-minded people around them until you, you know, put the word out and bring us all together.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And that's why I've been, you know, I've been pretty proactive in putting the group out there for people. You know, come join us. If you like a good cigar, this is the place to go. This is the place on web that you can go in, and we're going to have our event. Yeah. So even to the point where we've designed our badge ribbons, which, you know, at Dragon Con, you put an extra ribbon on your badge just to show you participated in this and the blood drive or whatever. So this year we've got our own. One of our members in the group is an artist. He designed it for us, and, you know, we're going out, and it's all moving in that direction. So we've kind of got our branding. We've got, you know.
Yeah, I saw someone was trying to put together a patch or whatever for the group, too, and that patch looks badass.
We're working on the patch. The problem right now is that we need to order it by Wednesday. So I'm trying to tell people, like, oh, we need to reach 100 orders or we can't do it because of the minimums. We're at 72. So we're this close to it.
Oh, I mean, you can definitely add a couple for us to the list.
Let me know. Yeah, we're putting that together. And yeah, Chris Hamer, he just put together a gorgeous patch out there. I mean, that's like some of the nicest artwork I've seen, especially with the cigar, the dragon. Yeah. It's not a really busy thing. It's, you know, very, I find it very stylized and classy. So I really am enjoying that. So
yeah, that's fine. We've looked at patches before, and it just hitting that minimum order is the pain of it all. No one makes a one-off patch.
Yeah, exactly.
And, or at least, you know, not a good one.
it looks great, and once that goes together, it's like it's going to be a great little, you know, reminder, a little bit of memorabilia that you can have for, you know, what is the inaugural year for the Dragon Con Cigar Group, because we put it together right after last Dragon Con, so this will be our first official meetup. And hopefully next year it grows. We get more cigar reps coming, more, you know, who knows, maybe even kind of any other liquor sponsorship. We're trying to move it in that direction to make it something that grows and something that becomes its own thing. Oh, yeah. You know, something to just add that little extra dimension to the con where people say, oh, last year I did this. It was great. Let's do it again and bring more people.
Yeah, maybe we can, you know, get it built at the point where we're, you know, doing panels on cigars. You know, get us a cigar track at Dragon Con. They've got a track dedicated just about anything else. I'm sure we can do some panels or something. For people that are coming in from that don't know about smoking, What are the best smoking spots at Dragon Con? I know we're doing the Trader Vic's event, but outside of the event, where can people usually go to meet up and have a smoke?
Outside of the event, well, if you want to try to stay within the host hotels, there are a couple of courtyards. Well, everybody gets together and does it in front of the Hyatt. But if you want a place where you can more relax and sit, the Hilton is the hotel that's had the best outdoor spaces for it, I think. You know, they've got under the stairs, and my problem is that I don't know the cardinal directions till I'm over there. But it's when you come in.
If you come in from the front door, you just pretty much go straight through and out the back, and that's
exactly under the stairs, where they actually do a lot of the photo sessions there too.
Yeah, all those big like group superhero sessions you see, that's pretty much where the area we're talking about. And they usually have a stage out there, then they have bands playing throughout the day and out the night. So there's music out there. There's usually kind of one of those outdoor bar setups, and there's usually even some seating out there.
That's exactly what it is. And the hotels are good about, you know, basically saying, let's put some liquor availability out there for people to sit there and have a drink. But they're also cool about you coming in with your own drinks, which a lot of places, I live in Utah, so that's actually quite the opposite out here. So it's really great to go to the South and to have that hospitality come up. It's like, oh, you're here for Dragon Con. This is awesome. Have a drink. So
it's real hard to get in trouble at Dragon Con. You have to really work for it, because as long as you're in one of the host hotels, they're like, you know, see no evil, hear no evil. As long as you're not hurting anybody else, it's like vaya con Dios. You know.
Just like that Saturday night at the Marriott, where it's the most risque costumes you're going to see. So,
I haven't been over to the Hilton yet, but everyone's been recommending that's where I need to go smoke. I usually end up smoking at the, because I always end up staying in the Hyatt. So by the pool area is another smoke friendly area if you're over on that side of the five hotels.
Yeah.
And, you know, Atlanta's also a good cigar city. I mean, I think when we looked it up for people that are coming in from out of town, and like we always stock up, you know, at our home shop ahead of time. But people that come in from out of town and forgot to bring any cigars with them, there's a few shops within like a half mile to a mile from, you know, an easy cab ride or even, you know, a walk if you're up to it. There's some shops in the area where you can go stock up your travel humidor for the weekend.
That's always good, especially when I fly. You know, one of the problems is taking lighters on the aircraft. TSA, you know, obviously you can't get them in. Yep. Sometimes you can't even check them. So it's kind of like got to go to a cigar shop at least just to get yourself a lighter so that you can – because I carry my Zycar travel humidor, but having my 15 cigars with me isn't any good if I can't light them.
Yes.
Or cut them, for that matter. That's the debacle we've seen with folks a time or two trying to knot off the cap of cigars. And
we don't recommend it.
No, not at all. Yeah, usually I take. That's the one thing at least you can check in your bag. I always take a punch and three cutters in case people around me want to smoke, and we usually do it there.
Yeah, I mean, I usually got my cutter, and Brad's got his, and if he even, he's extra prepared, because even if he forgets his cutter, he's got a cutter on a keychain, so we're normally never without a cutter. We may run out of fluid in our lighter occasionally, but yeah, there's usually a cutter handy.
Two things, it's always your bottle opener and your cutter have to be on you at all times, so that you're able to
exactly
have a good time wherever you go.
Before we get out of here, what's your favorite Dragon Con story? What's the weirdest thing you've experienced at the con?
Weirdest thing I've experienced at the con? Can't say it's been weird, but it was a lot of fun. I actually attended my first Dragon Con rave last year. It was Friday to Saturday night. My wife marches the parade, but I was with a couple of friends of ours because we're 501st members, but a couple of our Florida friends were there. And at about 2 a.m., my wife's like, I got to go to bed because I have the parade. You keep hanging. They say, let's go to the rave. And I'm like, rave? Sure. So we're there, and the DJ spinning on the stage, you know, lights, smoke, you know, throwing stuff onto the crowd, you know. And when you're sitting there and you're having a rave and you're sitting there between Gumby, a guy in an S&M harness next to Gumby, and, you know, a furry in front of you, you go, this is the kind of thing that can only happen at Dragon Con.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, yeah, that's yeah, if you're in the 501st, we're gonna have to have a conversation when we get down there, because I've been wanting to put together a costume and get in there. So yeah. I definitely have some trooping questions for you that weekend.
Absolutely. I'm a great advocate for the 501st. You know, aside from the Star Wars one costuming, there's the, you know, community service charity aspect that they do. So it's a great organization. And a couple of guys, actually, I want to think probably about five of the guys that I know from the 501st are going to be at the meetup on Thursday.
Sweet.
So it'll be a few.
I'm definitely interested in talking to those guys. Yeah, I started building a Mandalorian outfit, and I got the helmet done, and that's as far as I've made it. So I still got a lot of work to do to
get some armor up. Costume.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're on the top end of expensive, like a Boba Fett or a Jango Fett. I was looking at them going, ooh, I'm glad I'm just a TIE pilot, because that costs, you know,
That may be what I have to do, because, I mean, I have to lose some weight to be a stormtrooper. I'm like, there's no fat stormtroopers. It just doesn't look good. Go with a pilot outfit or something.
we'll see with the new movie. When the new movie started doing the promotions, they've licensed some of the new Episode 7 stormtroopers. And the company that has the license for it did a raffle among the worldwide 501st, and they issued 75 to start with, so that they could get them in time for celebration in Anaheim in April.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife happened to get one of those. She's got the Episode 7 Stormtrooper. And when we put it together, she's very short, but there's actually a lot of space inside that armor. You'd be surprised at what you could fit in it.
I'll check that out. Yeah, I know we're going to try to bring something to throw into the raffle pot. I don't know why. It depends on money and shipping. If we can get something put together before Dragon Con, but at the least, hell, maybe we'll pick up a nice cigar and throw it into the pot.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. With Chris from Perdomo, we're also going to be distributing the patch. If the patch run goes through, knock on wood, we'll be distributing most of them at the meetup. And of course, you got to come get your your badge ribbon from me over there. So we're getting it all together. And like I said, it's the first time from all the groups I've seen that kind of have like a corporate partner with it. So we're very excited about that. And everybody's always reaching out. So, you know, maybe corporate partners turn to corporate sponsors at some point. So
sounds good to me. Well, yeah. We'll let you back into the universe. Looking forward to seeing you in a couple weeks. Sure.
We will see you in less than 2 weeks.
Scary. We'll be back.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for some Beer 30.
Yeah, what are we drinking this week, Joe?
Just because you can't pronounce it. It is the Wild Heaven Dionysus Cuvée.
Yeah, this is a barrel-aged Wild Ale quad, and I gotta say, man, this thing is complex. It's you know, got some sour notes. One of the biggest things that jumps out at me is I don't know how this beer kept from exploding in the fridge, because dude, what we poured this beer and had to wait 20 minutes for the head to settle down. I mean, this is probably more than that the foamiest, fizziest beer I've ever had.
Yeah, when I was looking up information on the beer, the very first review I found out was like, said, beware, this is a Fizzmeister. The first bottle I bought exploded.
Yeah, well, I mean, dude, I couldn't believe, you know, how much pressure, you know, that bottle was contained. I don't know that it would have lasted another week.
Yeah, normally ones like that are usually a corked bottle. So yeah, I'm surprised this one didn't pop at some point.
But yeah, I mean, this is a very complex. I mean, this is almost more to me like drinking a wine than it is a beer, and it's a different take than what a barley wine would be. I mean, it's much more fuller body. It's, you know, definitely got some, you know, the sour notes on the beginning, but it's also very floral and fruity.
Yeah, it's their version of a quad, but it's also barrel aged for 6 months before moving on. So it definitely has that very fruity flavor that you get with a quadruple, but then it has a little bit of that, you know, alcohol notes from being, you know, barrel aged. So it's an interesting combo. And of course, this is a Wild Heaven beer, so it's another local Georgia brew. So if you're a Georgia person, you should be able to find this just about, you know, any of your good liquor stores.
Yeah, I mean, this is It's complex. I mean, I gotta say, I'm kind of digging it. Like, I didn't think this would really be my forte, but a combination of the sour and floor, I mean, it's kind of jiving. I'm not a wine drinker or anything of that nature, but I mean, I could get behind this.
Yeah, definitely don't drink it if you're in a hurry, because you're going to have to wait 20 to 30 minutes for the head to subside.
And you don't want to drink it in a hurry anyway. I mean, this is a pretty high ABV. It's 10.5%, so...
It's weird, because it's, like I said, it's... Most beers, like I said, any old... an old trick if you have a lot of head in your beers, stick your finger in it. The oils will usually dissipate the head pretty quickly. But this one, like, I stuck my finger in it, and it didn't change. It was just a hole in the head. This is like probably one of the most carbonated beers I've come across.
Ladies, don't finger the head. It will dissipate every time.
Damn.
Yeah. It's not often that you become speechless. It's like... Most epic beer review ever.
So what is a... For people that don't know, what is a wild ale?
A wild ale. I don't think I've ever had a wild ale. Educate the folks at home, Joe.
According to Google...
I have not tried to brew one of those yet.
A wild ale is generally refers to a beers brewed in America using yeast or bacteria in addition to Saccharomyces cerevisiae for fermentation. So it's got a little bit more of that wild yeast in it than, like, say, your standard, you know, lab-grown yeasts. And that will usually, like I said, change your flavor up and give you a more floral beer.
Yeah, don't make me break out my yeast poster. I will go school you on that. I just discovered it yesterday. I forgot I had it, but it basically gives you a rundown of every yeast strain, way to start it, the notes that it offers into the beer during the fermentation process and everything. So it's very quite complex, but
interesting.
A complex poster for a very complex beer, but I gotta say, I'm tired of talking about this thing. I want to sit back and enjoy it some more.
So what's your official Untappd rating?
I think I'm at a 4 on this one.
Yeah, it's probably a...
I mean, it's definitely a different take than our traditional stouts and, you know, some of the other beers we would go with, so...
Yeah, it's definitely not one of my usual tastes. I'd give it like a high threes, like a 3.9 or something like that, because it's not something I would drink every day, but it is a good beer for an example of this type of beer.
Absolutely.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for some science. You ready to get edumacated?
I think so. What's our topics for today?
Well, we got a little bit of drunk science. Always
Sweet.
My favorite type of science.
Seems like I'm always a little bit drunk when we're doing this podcast. It kind of goes hand in hand.
Scientists have basically proven the old wise tale that there are different types of drunk people. Yeah, we all know alcohol affects people differently, but they've narrowed it down to 4 types. University of Missouri, some of their researchers have published a paper in the Addiction Research Theory Journal, and they tested 374 volunteers, and they've determined according to their theory, there are 4 types of drunks. They've named them the Ernest Hemingway, the Mary Poppins, the Nutty Professor, and the Mr. Hyde.
You know what? Just based on the names there, I'm pretty sure I can distinguish exactly what each one is.
The Ernest Hemingway, which is the largest group, like 40% of the volunteers fell into this category. Basically, alcohol has no real... major personality effect on them. You know, they don't, you know, they're just drunk. They're not, they don't, who they are sober is pretty much who they are drunk. There's really no, you know, change in personality whatsoever. You know, because Ernest Hemingway was a famous drunk. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I like the quote, you know, drinks hells any amount of whiskey without getting drunk. Like,
Yeah, that sounds like something a drunk would say.
I just said it.
And then the next group is the Mary Poppins. If you know who that is, you know, practically perfect in every way is one of their sayings. But yeah, those people tend to get, they're your giggly happy drunks that, you know.
Mary Poppins, is that the umbrella floating or is that?
Yeah, I think that is the umbrella one.
I just wanted to make sure. I'm like, for those of you who know who that is, I'm like, I think I got this one right. A lot better than the last episode.
I could be wrong, but I agree with you. Yeah, those are your people you see that get like the whatever college girl drunk that just gets like super happy and the world is great and I love everybody drunks. Next is the nutty professor. Those are the people who completely shed their inhibitions and just become like, you know, they're maybe the shy, quiet person when they're sober, but as soon as they get drunk, they are the freaking life of the party. Everyone is my friend. Let's, you know, get naked and run through the quad.
Well, I mean, I don't.
Frank the Tank from Old School. He is the nutty professor. Both literally and figuratively. Because he was naked.
Keep your clothes on, folks. That's all I can say.
Yeah, because most of the people that fall into that category,
we're
you don't want to see
streaking.
Drunk.
Like, yeah, no, dude, only you are going streaking. Like, I might just need to slap the shit out of you.
And the fourth and final drunk they named is the Mr. Hyde, which is the person that you're always like, that person should not be drinking because they either get violent or emo or whatever. That, you know, not only do their personality completely flip when they're drunk, they flip in the bad way that you really don't want to hang out with these people.
Less responsible, intellectual, hostile. Like, all the traits that I don't like when people are drinking.
Yeah.
Like,
all the guys you see being dragged out of the bar by the cops at the end of the night, those are the Mr. Hyde drunks. So if you had to pick...
I mean, they were probably douchebags to begin with.
Yeah.
But,
so if you had to pick, of the four, which category do you think you fall into?
I don't. I am probably more the... I don't know. I would say probably a contrast between Mary Poppins and the Nutty Professor. Like, I'm a halfway. I mean, dude, there's been a lot of drunken goats and a lot of off-the-air stories that folks really don't need to hear about. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely do shed some inhibitions and
yeah,
I just don't tend to really give up. But I don't get violent or anything of that nature. I, you know.
Just get happy and
yeah,
moon
I mean,
people.
I just become carefree. I don't really care, but I'm not out to offend people or, you know, to get in fights or anything of that nature.
Yeah, I would say I'm probably mostly Ernest Hemingway with a little bit of Nutty Professor because, I mean, I pretty much say whatever I think anyway, so there's not much different when I'm intoxicated. But I do tend to get, if I'm a little bit more shy in, like, group activities. So, like, you know, after a few beers, I definitely get a little bit more social and more, like, you know, willing to talk to anyone. And so I would say, yeah, I probably get a little more social then, but, you know, nothing major. So I would say I'm definitely a Ernest Hemingway. I just want to smoke my cigar and sip my whiskey and be chill. And speaking of whiskey,
I will classify you after we wrap up Dragon Con. That's going to be the true test because
Dragon Con is a completely different animal. But speaking of whiskey,
well, that's when your true colors really shine out. I mean,
I'm trying to do a transition here, man. You're screwing up my smooth segue.
You're transitioning alcohol with alcohol.
Exactly. Whiskey in Space, a Japanese distillery, Suntory, has sent samples of whiskey into space to see if it affects the aging process in, you know, micro, low, no gravity settings.
Damn. God. Yeah, that's definitely out of my price range. Hell, the Remy Martin, you know, $4,000 bottle's out of my price range.
Well, these aren't going to be available.
A $20,000 shot just to pay for the fuel cost.
Well, these aren't going to be available to, you know, the general public, but they sent them up as part of the Japanese experiment module to the International Space Station, and they sent six samples of whiskey, everything from a brand new fresh batch to a 21-year-old whiskey, and they're going to age in space for at least 2 years, and then, you know, they will come back and they will sample and see if there is any kind of
I really want to get my hands on that 21-year-old
space whiskey
single malt. That's my life goal.
I mean, I've seen some companies that like age whiskey on ships and do all kind of crazy aging things that jack up the price. So, I mean, if these things come back and they're awesome, they may have to like launch their own satellite and start aging whiskey in space.
You know what they're going to have? They're going to have one of those big ass like teller tunnels that goes it's just freaking jet propelled or something like that.
They get one of those like whatever atmospheric balloons that go all the way up to the edge of space and just put a few casks of whiskey on it just so they can say it's been aged in space.
I mean, but wouldn't you need to do something special with the bottles or something? I mean, to accommodate for temperature change, for the pressure change and all of that stuff, like especially coming back into Earth's atmosphere. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, being on the space station, you know, it's heated, so they're not gonna have to deal with the
yeah, but it's all that distance in between that I would be more concerned about.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's that long of a trip to affect it that much. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I would like to see the results of that experiment to see if it does actually, no gravity actually affect the aging process.
That'd be a bitch trying to take a specific gravity reading.
Damn.
Quick, let's all break out our space hygrometers.
And speaking of space, recently, if you've probably seen in the news, one of our space probes finally took some up-close photos of Pluto and its moon. As soon as I find the name of the moon.
Charon, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Charon?
Well, yeah. But to identify, like, land features and stuff on these moons and Pluto and stuff, they've, you know, actually come up with names and stuff. So when they, you know, instead of doing, you know, crater 3274, they actually have general names that they can refer to. And most of the features on Pluto have been named after explorers, you know, famous Greek gods and whatnot. But the features named on Charon were named through a campaign called Our Pluto, with basically the internet got to vote on names for different items, and all these things have been approved by NASA and now have been submitted to the International Astronomical Union to be approved as official names. And basically everything on the moon has been named after nerdy stuff.
Yeah, well, the informal names.
Yeah, so we have the Vulcan Planium, Kirk Crater, Sulu Crater. There's even a TARDIS chasm. We also have the Serenity chasm, so any Firefly fans, we now know where the Serenity Valley is. It's on Pluto.
As well as the TARDIS.
Yeah, there's a Skywalker, Leia. There's even a Vader Crater, so pretty much all...
Vader Crater?
Yes. So pretty much all nerddoms are being represented in this new map of Charon, or Charon, or however now they pronounce it.
Not Chimichanga.
Dude, they need to be like a Deadpool Valley or something. With the Chimichanga Cave, or you know. I wish I'd have known about this. I would have voted up some Deadpool names for the moon.
Find some kind of molten lake or something like that and call it Lake Deadpool.
Oh, Lake Deadpool. It's filled with taco sauce.
Dude, speaking of tacos, there's a freaking one of my neighbors, I guess, has invested in a taco trailer. Like
what?
Yeah, like they were just set up in their driveway the other day, like serving tacos and stuff like that.
Did you go try any?
I did not. Like, this thing is smaller than the pool table. Like, it's extremely tiny table. I'm like, how do you cook anything in there?
Yeah, I've heard of, like, you know, people setting up lemonade stands, but not taco trailers.
Yeah.
Last episode, we talked about hackers being able to take over Jeeps. Well, a couple hackers now have been able to take over guns. I'm not sure if we've mentioned it before, but the Tracking Point rifle has come up with these special computerized scopes and rifle combos that basically it's a rifle that can't miss. It, you know, you lock in a target, and the rifle will adjust itself. You know, its aiming optics.
Well, apparently it can miss now.
But it will, you know, figure out all the necessary calculations and tell you exactly where you need to point the rifle to hit the target every time. But one of the new features is it's Wi-Fi compatible, so you can, you know, keep track of your shooting history on your computer. Well, these two hackers, Michael Auger and Rima Sandovic, which are like the guys were messing with the Jeeps, are good hackers showing weaknesses in programs that they can tell the parent company how to fix. And they were able to hack into the scope and change the zero on it to make sure it, you know, cannot hit what it's aiming at. So you may think it's lined up perfectly, but really it's, you know, a foot off from what you're trying to hit through this, you know, Wi-Fi compatible version.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you got to think, though, anything connected to a network and you operate on the assumption it can't be hacked, I mean, that's just a challenge for people. Like,
I mean, there's not that many of these rifles out here because they're super expensive, but if this is something that, you know, eventually worked its way into the military market, you know, that would be a bad thing if someone can hack in and all of a sudden change your targets. And this rifle, like I said, once you've locked in a target, it won't even fire unless the rifle is pointing at what it thinks it should be pointing at. So, like I said, it could... Or even if they completely bricked your scope and you're unable to use it, now you're stuck with a manual rifle with no kind of optics on it. And so you're definitely not going to be making any kind of long-distance sniper shot with this thing once it's if they shut it down completely. So, yeah, that's definitely a weird... something that they definitely going to want to fix before that thing goes into any kind of widespread production.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I was just doing a little bit of research earlier, and apparently there's a new exploit that has been detected in the Android device, and apparently it impacts like 95% of all Androids in use today.
Nice.
Yep, so it basically, a text message comes across. You don't even have to open the text message, and it allows the person to completely take control of the phone.
So they can find all your nudie photos?
And, yeah, all that kind of stuff, so... yeah, kind of interesting.
And, speaking of another good use of rifles, we've found another example of the zombie virus in nature. mind controlling wasps, are able to infect and take over spiders.
Interesting. Do continue. Yeah.
Published in the Journal of Experimental Biology, these special wasps called the Reclinatirivirus nescini, I can't pronounce scientific stuff, basically they lay their eggs in orb-weaving spiders. And, you know, they'll, you know, basically deposit an egg in that actually grows inside.
Well, this says it deposits the egg on the outside of the body and then it hatches and latches itself onto the spider's abdomen.
It feeds off the spider and eventually, you know, hatches from the spider killing it. But before it kills the spider, it actually causes the spider to weave a web that will protect, basically weave a cocoon that will protect the growing wasp larva. Because these orb-weaving spiders do have two different types of webs. They have, like, a normal web that they use to capture bugs and such. And then they have a, like, nesting web that they use for when they're molting and stuff. That's basically, it's a smaller web that's less likely to get disturbed or hit. And it's more shiny, so you know, bugs will know to avoid it when they're, you know, not in feeding mode. But, yeah, this third type of web are only made by spiders that are infected with these, you know, wasp larvae.
Yeah, and I think orb weavers are often called riding spiders. Like, they're the ones that usually their webs are, you know, pretty spectacular to look at, but in the center it look like little squiggly lines, like it was trying to sketch something. So I don't know.
Yeah, so that's interesting, because I mean, we've talked about the whatever the parasites that'll take over ants and whatnot. So yeah, this is, I mean, people laugh when we were preparing for the zombie apocalypse, but, you know, there's already examples of mind-controlling parasites in nature. That's just, yeah, dude, that's all zombieism is mind-controlling parasite.
How do we know we didn't get a podcast parasite? Dude. What if we're already in control of some other force?
It's a pretty boring force if that's his master plan is to take us over and make us do podcasts.
And then we die.
Yeah. But I think that'll about wrap us up. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News, folks. Yeah! We got some movies, some video games, and some cool just general geekdom, fandom, all kinds of interesting things today.
So what's news this week?
Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One scores a release date. This is a movie we've talked about wanting to come to fruition for quite some time after getting our hands on the book. And
yeah, I mean, I watched Pixels the other day, and that just kind of made me want to see Ready Player One so bad, because I'm like, oh, this has to happen now, because...
What were your thoughts on Pixels? I haven't seen it yet, so try not to spoil too much, but I saw that movie getting a lot of criticism, and I couldn't tell if it was just mainly because they cast Adam Sandler and folks thought it was going to be the Adam Sandler movie or something, but...
I enjoyed it. It was a cool story, but I think the problem is you have to be old enough to get the references. I mean, it's definitely 80s nostalgia movie. So if you're like, you know, in your teens or 20s, you may not understand it. You probably don't know like the pain of playing Dragon Con, or not Dragon Con, freaking Donkey Kong in a coin op machine somewhere. So yeah, if it ain't Halo, you don't know what the fuck it is. So I think that's the problem. I think you have to be, it's one of those movies that it's kind of a family movie.
You've got to know what it's like to drop.
You got to know what it's like to, you know, like you said, drop $20 on some freaking asteroid or whatever.
Or $20 trying to beat Goro in Mortal Kombat or some shit. Like, yeah, man, I feel the pain. Speaking of which, there was an arcade laser tag place that opened up just up the street from us. I don't know. It kind of, I just drove by it. Looked a little bit like a Chuck E. Cheese or something like that. But, I don't know. Maybe something, they've got a couple of arcade games tucked away in the back. Sweet. That might be interesting. So if you're in the South Forsyth area, it is just past the Walmart on 141 before you get into Johns Creek. So there's that. But
check that out.
Back on topic.
I used to be gangster on some laser tag.
You know, I have yet to play laser tag. I don't know. Apparently I'm missing out my childhood or something.
Yeah, it's like playing first-person shooters for real. Before I discovered paintball, that was my jam. I played so much laser tag before I got into like.
Yeah, I mean,
paintball,
I played a good
airsoft.
Bit of paintball, quite a bit of airsoft, but never got to really experience the whole laser tag thing. So
it's basically the same thing, but without the pain, and it's a lot cleaner. You don't have to clean paint off of you when you're done. And sometimes they play some like awesome like techno music while you're doing battle.
So straight up EDM battles.
Yeah, so you usually got a soundtrack going while you're playing. So.
That's pretty cool.
Sounds like you're some German techno club. But anyway, back on topic.
Yep. So Warner Brothers and Village Roadshow Pictures have targeted December 15th, 2017 for the release of Ready Player One. If you folks have heard us talk about the book but have not read it yet, I highly encourage you to go pick that book up. I mean, I've probably read through that thing 3 times now, and each time I find a different reference or something that, you know, just fancies my geekdom, so...
And we all know your geekdom is fancy.
That it is, my friend. Up next, a little bit Star Wars news. We've got a couple of different topics here. The Force Awakens, we saw the new trailer as well as some new photos.
I wouldn't really call it a new
trailer.
Well,
not really new, but there's some...
There was like a couple extra scenes in like the Korean release or something.
But, I mean, you know, this is the first time that you really see the full extensiveness of the army. And, I mean, that's just an impressive shot, you know, looking over the backs of everybody and you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah, we still don't know like anything about the story or who's good, who's bad, but it still looks amazing.
Yes, I mean, I'm
still hopeful it's not going to suck, but it looks amazing. I won't know. I won't pass judgment until I know a little bit more about the story. But yeah, it just
I don't know.
The visuals, it's going to look great.
You know,
whether the story's going to make sense or not, we don't know. But it looks amazing.
Yeah, I mean, dude. Here we are, we're going back playing Rogue Squadron on Nintendo 64 and everything else, so I mean...
Have you seen the trailer, the flight for Battlefront?
I have not. I saw an article on it, and I bookmarked it, but I have not seen it in...
Yeah, like that's the thing I'm going to have to invest money in and finally upgrade my gaming system, because, yeah, there's not only the ground fighting, they've actually added missions where you get to fly, and it looks like, you know, like X-Wing or Rogue Squadron or whatever, you know, those old games, but it's like, you know, souped up graphics and stuff. It's almost like playing that that game we played at Dave & Buster's, the whatever X-Wing simulator thing they had.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I really want to, especially if it's, you know, all online multiplayer where I get to like smoke some fools in my X-Wing. It's going to, you'll never see me again because I'll be at home for like at least a week.
Well, I mean, this is going to be a pretty good segue. What if I told you you could have the ability to pilot the Millennium Falcon?
What?
Yeah. So apparently Bob Iger, the chief chairman, the executive officer of Walt Disney, he has released a video basically announcing that both Disneyland and...
Disney World, Hollywood Studios in Florida as well.
Yep. As well as in Anaheim. Both are going to basically get a 14-acre Star Wars, you know... real life, you're going to be walking around with humanoids, interacting with droids, all kinds of stuff. One of the biggest attractions is you will have the ability to pilot the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, it looked like they're from the drawings and stuff he was showing, because they had their big D23 conference where they kind of, you know, released the, this is what Disney's going to be working on for the next year or so. And yeah, some of the concept drawings, I mean, there's like a full-size Millennium Falcon right in the middle of that part of the park.
And something that's really going to suit your fancy. Did you see the image of the cantina?
Yes. That's one thing he said, that like all the restaurants and stuff will be inhabited by locals. So I'm like, I can finally go in and have a drink in an actual Mos Eisley cantina and see, maybe they'll have some Twilight Dancing Girls. I may have peed a little when I saw, I mean, that freaking video is like, I was like, oh my God, I was like freaking five again.
Yeah, it looks like it's truly going to be an epic adventure and an experience. So something I am super stoked and super excited for. You know, we've talked about doing our adult Disney trip. So, I mean, that pretty much just sealed the deal right there. As well as once maybe we go and we visit the, you know, park, and then we go and do the Star Wars cruise afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right.
Exactly.
I got your thoughts a little bit on Pixels, another movie that is absolutely bombed. And, you know, I kind of had high expectations from the initial trailer, but Fantastic Four, man. Is this not the shittiest movie of the summer or what?
Yeah, I didn't even realize that it came out until I saw, like, everyone talking the backlash of it. Like, everyone, there was not one positive post I've seen about it.
No.
Everyone's like, I saw this movie, so you don't have to.
Yes, that's pretty much the experience that I got from it. I don't know. At this point, I wouldn't even waste the bandwidth trying to get a digital copy or anything.
I think the only way I'll watch it is if we, like, you know, get drunk and make fun of it, Mystery Science Theater style. But I mean, this, I really had no hope for that movie anyway, because when they tell like the actors and people involved, oh, don't go read the source material. I mean, have they learned nothing from like the Marvel example, trying to be true to the original stories? And like I said, they tried to do something called Fantastic Four that was nothing like Fantastic Four. So I pretty much, you know, knew this thing was going to fail from the start.
Yeah, I mean, so would you think there was any hope for the franchise should Fox Studios, you know, sell the rights to Marvel or something? Do you think Marvel could turn it around and make something of it? Or do you think at this point Fantastic Four is just a lost cause and doesn't have the fan base that some of the other films do?
I just don't think that, I mean, we've had so many bad Fantastic Four movies that I don't think that it's savable. And right now the MCU has gotten so complicated that I think trying to squeeze another four characters into it, you know, might not be a good thing. Maybe in like phase four, once they've kind of completed everything they're working on now and start trying to come up with new stuff once we get past the last Avengers movie, and maybe the, you know, in the far, far future, once they're kind of starting on to a new storyline, they might be able to introduce it then. But yeah, at this point, I think it's just like, let it stay dead for a while. Well, until, I mean, until that memory has been erased, and it's far enough to get the taint of this movie away from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Hulk experienced a lot of that. I mean, there were some really, really bad Hulk films. And,
yeah, that's why we can't get a Garofalo standalone Hulk movie. It's just because those first couple movies were not the greatest.
So in closing of Fantastic Four, when the director says, yeah, this is not the movie that I intended to produce, says that openly, you know it's probably shitty.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe the director's really good at Halo or something, but a cool announcement I saw from Microsoft is they are going to host a Halo tournament that will be giving away $1 million in prize money. So we talk a lot of smack about Halo and stuff like that, but, you know, if there's $1 million on the line, I think I'll pick up a joystick and give my...
Yeah, because I haven't played... I used to play a lot of Halo back when I had an Xbox, but yeah, I've been, you know, a PS3 owner and, you know, hopefully getting a PS4 at some point. My Halo skills, if it was a Call of Duty tournament, I might have to jump in it, but yeah, I think Halo is outside my wheelhouse right now.
Yeah, which, speaking of, you know, Microsoft, I mean, I'm almost tempted to get the Xbox One just because they released a rare game pack on Xbox One, and it looks absolutely awesome. I mean, they've kind of remastered some of the old-school classics like Killer Instinct and some of those type of games, so it's like a 30-game lineup. So, I mean, I'd be curious to try. I'm always a big fan of, you know, like the Sega Genesis game packs and stuff like that. Yeah, man, play the old school stuff on
modern system would be pretty sweet.
You know, trying to play Atari on a 60-inch screen does not work, my friends. Trust me.
Yeah,
I've gone out and...
It just does not look good.
Yeah. You know, we're a little bit late just because of the show, but we did get the official Deadpool Red Band trailer, and I got to say, instant nerdgasm.
Yeah, we talked about it last week because it was coming out like as we were posting the show, but yeah, it's everything I hoped it would be. I'm so excited for this movie. If the trailer is any indicator of how the rest of the movie is going to be, I'm sold. Freaking Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool.
Oh, yeah. No, he sold that character, you know, I mean, we both said it. If anybody is going to play Deadpool, it had to be Ryan Reynolds.
That's the only thing that could probably save the Fantastic Four is have him just show up and make fun of them through the whole movie. Like, if you add Deadpool to the Fantastic Four, then it might be worth seeing.
I would be curious to see how that would play out. That'd be interesting. That, or just get a list of all the movies that have bombed and, you know, kind of do like Beavis and Butthead used to do back in the old school MTV days where they would, like, rag on music videos and stuff like that, but just have Deadpool just going all throughout the Marvel Universe just, you know, talking mad shit about everything.
I mean, they did a comic a while back called Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe where he, like, went crazy-er and started killing, like, every single hero, villain, like, just pretty much wiped out everybody. You know, there you go. Just have him, like, go in and, like, just... kill off the Fantastic Four. Probably the best way to do it.
And then in turn, Deadpool kills Deadpool. So, any news or anything of that nature that you know you got that I haven't touched on?
Not really. I think that'll about wrap us up for this Dragon Con report. What's something? You've been looking at, you know, what's coming up. Is there anything you're particularly excited about that you want to see or that you're waiting to check out?
For Dragon Con?
Yeah.
I would love to get in on Karen Gillan, you know, one of her panels. I don't even know if you'll be able to get close to a building. but also, so a lot of good stuff coming from Doctor Who. Super excited to see Tribe One perform. You know, I haven't got to experience, you know, his stuff live, and I've been a big fan of, you know, like his Marvel A to Z. Hell, we've used that on the show a time or two. So
yeah, you get into some of these like all night Dragon Con raves, it gets crazy.
So I mean, that's kind of the stuff. I mean, dude, it's been a decade since I was at the last Dragon Con, so I mean, I'm pretty much going to have to go into this thing as a noob. So I'm going to be relying on, you know, the veterans and stuff like that. Luckily, I volunteered, so I'll get some insider knowledge, and hopefully they'll have some secret passageways for me to migrate the masses, but
yeah,
I'm stoked.
If you don't have a hangover by Monday, you're not trying hard enough.
I will probably have a hangover come that Friday morning.
All right. And with that, like I said, check. We'll be at the Rocky Patel event next Saturday. If you're in the area, stop by, say hi. We'll also be, and you know, specific to Dragon Con, we will be at the Dragon Con Cigar Group on Thursday night at 9:30. The ESO is always at Dragon Con, and there's going to be an ESO meet and greet. I don't have the time yet. We'll probably stop by there if we're available. I know Sunday night we're recording with the big ESO hosts group, which that's one thing that's kind of cool about this is, I mean, this time last year I was following around Director Faber trying to get suggestions and stuff on how we can put our podcast together. And now a year later, we'll be sitting on a panel with him and you know, recording with them at Dragon Con. And I think our next show after Dragon Con is our 1 year like anniversary episode. So it's wild to see how far things have gone from asking his advice last year to, you know, this year we're, you know, been on the network and have almost been around a full year. So that's kind of cool that, you know, Dragon Con's kind of like the birthplace of of the birthday of the Cigar Nerds.
Probably one of my end goals is to get Felicia Day. I'm going to have her create me a custom Cards Against Humanity card. That's going to be a thing.
Good luck.
Yeah.
That's your mission if you choose to accept it.
Oh, it's already been chose. Now, whether or not I complete it successfully is TBD.
Also, Good Real Men Smoke Cigars. Pick you up your official Cigar Nerd shirt. You can find us on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram at CigarNerdPod. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. Also find us on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. And with that, I want to quote my favorite card from the Dragon Con edition of Cards Against Humanity. Nothing is more disturbing than a twerking Jabba. And I'm sorry I did that last year. Peace out.
And good night.
And beware the furries.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We are your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.